ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजम् उरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिकामाधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Continuing this with the theme, sadhus as tirthas. Saintly people are the media by which we can cross over material existence. Or if one's a materialist, one can approach a sadhu for crossing over one's immediate material difficulties. But real sadhus are not interested in helping to cross their material difficulties, although such people are generally taken to be the best sadhus, as we see that it's become a common thing now. The definition of sadhu is reinvented as someone who gives personality development courses and things like this. Actually, sadhus are meant for giving personality development courses, but it's not in the way that it's generally understood nowadays, that you become a good public speaker, become bold, time management. Personality development means subduing the bad tendencies, kam, krodh, lobh, ityadi, and developing the good tendencies, of which the fountainhead of them all is bhakti. Yasya asti bhakti bhagavatya kinchana sarvaya gunais tatra samasate suraha. One who has unflinching, I believe Srila Prabhupada uses that adjective in this translation, unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in him all good qualities develop. Or to be more precise, we can say they unfold, they're already there. So a sadhu helps us to come to our constitutional position, which is good. Reality is good. Satyam Shivam Sundaram. The truth is auspicious and good. It's not just a bunch of waves. Some theory, just a bunch of waves floating around. Well, yeah, Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Abdi Lahari. That's the floating in the waves of Gopi Bhav. That's the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So the Guru helps us. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented that the duty of the Guru, it is specifically the Gauriya Guru, Gauriya Vaishnava, is to assist people to come to the state of their awakening, when they awaken to the fact, Ami Siddha Krishna Das, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. I am pure. I don't have to do anything else. I just have to understand that I'm pure by nature. I don't have to try to be humble, kind. I don't know if they teach this in the personality development. Probably personality development for the demoniac ages, how to pretend that you're friends with people and exploit them. How to win friends and influence people, which is actually how to pretend that you like people and then exploit them. That's what it actually comes to. But we are by nature eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. We are by nature connected with the truth, which is beautiful and auspicious. Satyam Shiva Sundaram. So there are processes to help us uncover our nature. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, when one becomes specifically awakened to the extent of understanding one's Siddha Swarup, one's eternal position in Krishna's service, then the guru's job is just to direct him, or not so much to command him, just to give some assistance, because you're already there. But even in transcendence, it's not, as we were discussing, the guru mara vidya of the Mayavadis, that you don't need a guru anymore, you kill them. But everyone needs a guru. Even Krishna thinks that Radha is his guru. He has guru. We know Sandipani Muni, his guru, taught him so many things. But that, again, it's the Sandipani Muni teaching Krishna is just like the cloud bringing water to the ocean. The water comes from the ocean and he gives it back. So in 64 days and nights, Krishna learned everything. Well, he already knew everything. So the sadhus, they help us on our way. They help us cross over. Crossing over in material existence, it's going from the frying pan to the fire. There's a saying in English. Going from the frying pan to the fire. You're burning in the frying pan, so you jump out and you land in the fire. So what's better? The one's as bad as the other. Maybe one's worse than the other. So the whole idea of a sadhu helping one to be a better person in material existence, it's all a fraud, as we will discuss from the words of Narottam Das, I'll get back to what's being stated here. Quote from Sri Hari Bhakti Kalpa Latika. Who wrote that? Anyone know? If you know, please let us know, because it's unknown. Tatraiva Ganga Yamunadi Nadyas, Tatraiva Tirthani Vasanti Sadhyaha. Sadhyaha, important word. You know what that means? Once only. Tatraiva Dharama Sakala Aramante Yatresha Bhaktir Brisham Avibhati. In the heart where the Lord's devotional service shines, the Ganga, Yamuna, and other sacred rivers flow. In that heart, the holy places of pilgrimage immediately take residence. Yeah, immediately here. Vasanti Sadhyaha. Here it's being used in the sense of immediately. And all virtues perform pastimes. From Padyavali. Who's the author of that? Rupa Goswami. There may be so many Padyavalis, but actually he's the compiler. He took verses from here and there. Here's a verse with a similar import, and the author is unknown, because Rupa Goswami, he put the author's name of each verse. There are some verses from Shikshashtakam of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also there. Tadraiva Ganga Yamuna cha tatra Godavari tatra Sarasvati cha Sarvani Tirthani Vasanti tatra yat Yatra kata prasangaha. Yatra achutodara. The Ganga, Yamuna, it actually is written here as Ganges. I would like to see. It's just a desire that instead of writing Ganges, which is an anglicized form, we can write Ganges. No one in India says Ganges. Ganga. Ganga. We say Ganga, we say Ganga, we feel very happy, don't we? Just to say the name Ganga, hear the name Ganga. Ganga, Yamuna, Godavari, Sarasvati, as well as all holy places of pilgrimage, stay where the transcendental topics of the infallible personality of Godhead are narrated. So the both of these verses say that all holy places and all holy rivers are already there where there are where there's devotional service, where topics of Krishna are being discussed. That means where there are sadhus, because our sadhus don't do these things. One narrative, anecdote, Srila Prabhupada, in his busy business life, before he left home, he was a businessman, so in his business life, he was traveling and he took a day out to visit the Rajamandal Parikrama of the Gauriya Mat. And he arrived, he just went for one day, and then he went back to his business life. He arrived, and he was there, and then there was some announcement that from their camping place, because they move around and they put their tents down in one place every day, that evening there would be an excursion. Maybe they took buses or whatever, I don't know. There'll be an excursion to Koshi to see the deity there of Ananta. And also, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur will be speaking. So you can have your choice. So most of the devotees, most of the pilgrimage members, went to Koshi in the far north of Rajamandala. And Srila Prabhupada thought, what will I get from going to see the deity? Let me stay and hear. And not many stayed to hear. Most went, I guess they thought, we can hear Saraswati Thakur anytime, but this is only the chance we'll get to go there. So not many stayed, just a few stayed. And most of them also left, because even to listen to Saraswati Thakur's lectures, you had to have enthusiasm, determination, utsahan, nisya, dharyat, enthusiasm, determination, patience, because they're very difficult to understand. Srila Prabhupada himself said, I couldn't understand, and most of his disciples didn't understand, apparently. Afterwards, they would come to, if Sridhar Maharaj is present, and they would ask him, what did he say? And then he would explain it in more simple language. So he stayed and listened, and gradually various members excused themselves. And those who stayed, many of them, they would have had duties in the organization of the camp, so they excused themselves. So there were very few left. So the talk ended, and Abhay went back to the tent he was staying, and the next morning he left. He didn't speak anything personally with them. But shortly after that, maybe... When was that? It must have been the next year, 32 Parikrama, 33. I said 22, the other day I said in 1922, Srila Prabhupada was initiated in Prayagraj, but 33 he was initiated. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who traveled widely and saw so many people when he was brought, when this young man, well, he wasn't so young at that time, 37, still fairly young. In India, 37 is still considered young. In the West, it's considered old. Because in the West, it's life is meant for sense gratification, and by the age of 37, you can't enjoy yourself that much anyway. You don't have the same useful energy. So he came and then he said, yes. He likes to hear. I have noted him. So he remembered. So that's an example of how Srila Prabhupada, he got the essence that hearing a sadhu is that's more important than visiting so many holy places. But the two things, they're supposed to go together. In this regard, Bhagavatam, I'm reading from Srila Prabhupada's translation of Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 23. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. There are so many dead bodies walking around. It's a horror movie. So you can tell someone, I'm going to go and see a horror movie. Where? I'm just going to go into the city, that's all. Horror movie, everywhere, dead bodies. No life without Krishna consciousness. It's living dead. So even going on pilgrimage is subservient to this. If one goes on pilgrimage, but one doesn't have a sense of subservience to the great devotees, then what is the use of going on pilgrimage? In this regard, I'm going to read from one song of Narottam Thakur, in which he begins a song that Thakur Vaishnava Pad Abonir Shushampad. The lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, they are the great wealth of the earth. I'm just going to read a section from this when he's discussing going on pilgrimage compared to, well, I'll read it. Vaishnava charana jal prema bhakti dite bal ar keha nahe balavanta Vaishnava charana renu mashtake bhushana binu ar nahi bhushanera anta. And then comes the really astonishing part. Tirtha jal pavitra gun likhi ache purane shesha bhaktir pravanchana Vaishnava padodak shamanahi eshab jate hoi banchita puran. So he says that the water from the lotus feet of a Vaishnava has the power to give prema bhakti, pure love of Krishna, highest level of bhakti. There's nothing like that which has the same power. The dust of the Vaishnava's lotus feet is the decoration for the head, and there's no need of any other decoration. So you can have a nice hairstyle and have ornaments and this and that. But Narottam Das says the lotus feet of the Vaishnava. And that includes, of course, the dust of Sri Vrindavan Dham. What is the dust of Sri Vrindavan Dham? It's the footprint dust of Krishna and his devotees. That's why when we enter a temple, you should touch and put to our head, because the dust of so many devotees have come. And in Bengal, the tradition is there that kirtan's performed and then the people will roll on the ground. And we don't do that in ISKCON, maybe because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there was a Dhulat festival in Navadvip every year, in which people, dhul, dust. So people roll in the dust. But at the same time, well, and during the same festival, there was a lot of licentiousness, singing of very intimate songs, pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and behavior inappropriate for Vaishnavas, especially in sexual matters, that was going on. So maybe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur stopped it because of that, and we tend to think it's a sahajiya thing to do. But actually it's a very good practice. You roll in the dust so your whole body gets covered. Maybe we should reinstitute these things. It's a great act of humility and it's recommended in Shastra. So then he goes on to say that in the Puranas is described the quality of the purity of the water in holy places. That's what I've been talking about for days, right? And the Narottam Thakur says, all cheating. It's all cheating. On the path of bhakti, it's all cheating. What's that at the beginning of Bhagavatam? Dharma projita kaitava atra. Herein, cheating dharma is rejected. So that includes the discussion of the power of the water at holy places. Wow, that's a big thing. What else does he say? He says that the water of the lotus feet, there's nothing to compare with the water of the lotus feet of the Vaishnav, by which one's desires are fulfilled. And here desire doesn't mean passing an exam, going to America, any such things. It means attainment. What do we sing every day? Sevar Abhilash or Kori? What is that? It's very high aspiration, actually, in our sampradaya. Very high aspiration. Enivedana dharo shakir anugato koro. That's ultimately what we're supposed to be aiming for. Is to shiva adhikara diya koro nijadasi. To serve in Vrindavan under the tutelage of Tulasi Manjari or others. So Narottam Das, you may remember early in this series I spoke about the anti-pilgrimage tradition. In some Puranas we'll also find that. It says it's useless to go on pilgrimage if the heart is not pure, one is not trying to be purified. Don't think that you can just, it's a mechanical thing, and you can just go there. The real thing is that the heart has to be purified. So anyway, there, Kabir and then Dayananda Saraswati of the Arya Samaj, who is against pretty much everything that anyone does, except a few things which he considers are to be the essence of the Vedas. So this is anti-pilgrimage tradition somewhat, but from a different perspective. Dayananda Saraswati, and this, he said, well, it's all imagination, there's nothing there. Actually, there is in the tirthas, in the holy places. There is something, at the very least, there's purification from sin, helping to arouse the sense that I should not live simply for material gains, or even if I only live for material gains, I have to go through some demigod for the purpose of that. So there is some benefit, but then again, it's like going to a rich... If we know that the actual goal is to serve Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, then cure my backache, going to a holy place, cure my backache, it's like going to a rich man and begging for some ashes. It's ridiculous. But if we don't know anything else, or Govinda put the bundle of wood back on my head, so it becomes ridiculous. When we know the real need, what is our prayojana? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used that term, prayojana. the Veda Shastra. Veda Shastra speaks of three subjects: sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Prayojana, what is our ultimate need? Now, Narottam, who spoke against all going to these holy places, but we find in his songs, it's many of his songs, he's simply longing. How can I go back to Vrindavan? He went in his youth. He made a vow to stay there. He broke his vow. Why? Because, as he states, Guru Vaka Parama Mahatta, the order of the Guru is of the highest importance. So his Guru told him, you go out, you leave Vrindavan, So he left. But he was always hankering for Vrindavan. So he's not against going to holy places. And again, Vrindavan is not exactly a tirtha. It's a dham. There is a difference. Srila Prabhupada has written this very interesting purport in this regard. This is from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 16, text 281. Srila Prabhupada lists various devotees who did not live in Vrindavan. The first name he gives is Narottama. He did for some time, but most of his life he lived in his birthplace, actually, Keturi Gram. So the list of various devotees: Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasa Acharya. He was another one. Narottam Srinivas Shamananda. The three of them. They all studied under Jiva Goswami. They were all initiated by different gurus, or they all studied under Jiva Goswami. So they all made a vow, we'll stay together and live our lives very happily in Vrindavan. And Jiva Goswami told them, no, you go back to your home places and preach. So Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Sri Bhagavan Das Babaji Maharaj, and Srila Gaurkisar Das Babaji Maharaj, and later Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur of Calcutta, always engaged in Nam Bhajan and certainly did not live anywhere but Vrindavan. Now, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, most of them, they all went to Vrindavan, or they lived in Vrindavan for some time, but then they lived elsewhere in all of these. They lived in Gauramandal, in Bengal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's record of him visiting Vrindavan once or twice, I can't remember. Bhagwan Das Babaji, I don't know what is exactly. He's Bhagwan Das Babaji of Kalna. So they didn't, if you ask where Bhagwan Das Babaji Maharaj lived, you'll say Kalna. Kalna just opposite Shantipur. Bhagnapara, to be precise. Just next to Kalna. So, but here Srila Prabhupada's written, they did not live anywhere but Vrindavan. Where did Bhaktivinoda Thakur live? Well, he lived in many places, and then he made his house in Calcutta. And then again, he made his house in Navadvip Dham. So where did they live? They lived in Vrindavan. How is that? Because by their Nam Bhajan, they were living in Vrindavan. That's the point being made here. Now, Srila Prabhupada goes on to write, presently, the members of the Hare Krishna movement throughout the world live in materially opulent cities such as London, New York, Los Angeles, Paris, Moscow. Very interesting that he wrote Moscow, because at that time, Krishna consciousness was not, it was hardly known in Moscow. Zurich, he mentioned Zurich, and Stockholm. It's interesting why he chose these cities in particular. However, we are satisfied with following in the footsteps of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas. Because we live in the temples of Radha Krishna and continuously hold Harinam Sankirtan, the chanting of Hare Krishna, we consequently live in Vrindavan and nowhere else. So you can live in Zurich and live in Vrindavan at the same time. No need to live in Vrindavan. Right? That's the conclusion. No problem. The next line, Prabhupada goes on to say, we are also following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by attempting to construct a temple in Vrindavan for our disciples throughout the world to visit. So you don't need to live in Vrindavan. Wherever you are, chant Hare Krishna, and you live in Vrindavan. And we're making a temple in Vrindavan. This must have been written before 1975, when the temple was opened. We're also making a temple so you can come and visit. So the Vrindavan has its own value. I know I need to go to Vrindavan. It's all in the mind, right? Okay, so you can save a lot of money on the prasadam bill. Just tell the devotees that you can just take prasadam in the mind. I don't think it'll be a very popular move. See, you're such an advanced devotee. Here, come sweep the floor. Okay, Hare Krishna. I'm doing it in my mind. It's all the same, you see, it says in Nectar of Devotion. You don't underestimate. We shouldn't underestimate the value of great devotees who actually live in Vrindavan by their bhajan. And we also shouldn't underestimate the devotees, the holy place of Vrindavan. And we see that the great devotees, Narottam Das, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're actually, it's not just something that you say, oh, he's actually in Vrindavan. But you see, they manifest their hearts in their writings, and you'll see that from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, he's living in Vrindavan. Narottam Das, he's living in Vrindavan. They write it in the mood that when will I get such a chance? But actually you can see there it's a Chamara Dulabo Kobe Heribo Mukha Chandra. Narottam Das sings, when will I get the chance to fan Radha and Krishna with the chamar, the whisk, and see their beautiful lotus faces? They're doing it, but they're saying it in a mood, when will I get that chance? So it's not such a cheap thing to say, yeah, I'm living in Vrindavan. But Srila Prabhupada says, the devotees, they're living in the temple of Radha and Krishna. I mean, they're not just living there. Living in the temple means daily so much service has to be done. Practically, one temple can keep thousands. We see Sri Rangam in originally in its glory. Literally thousands of people were busy all day, every day, in the service of Ranganatha Swami. So many things to do. So living in the temple and continuously holding Harinam Sankirtan. So it's not just having a house and having some deities there, but actually the atmosphere of Vrindavan, in which everyone is fully absorbed in serving Krishna and chanting his glories and performing kirtan. You may say, well, I didn't hear about kirtan in Vrindavan. If you read in Krishna book, 10th canto, you don't hear mrdangas, kartals, but everyone was always talking about, if they weren't directly with Krishna, of course there is music also for the dancing, but we find there's that whole chapter in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, when Krishna is in the forest, they were at home, and all day they among themselves, they're speaking the glories of Krishna. So that way, they were always engaged in kirtan. So sadhus as tirthas. Tirtha means a holy place. Tirtha means a sadhu. And the sadhus, they purify the holy places. So one kind of tirtha purifies another kind of tirtha. So the discussion I'm gradually unfolding is, what is better, a holy place or a holy person? We see, for us, when we go to a holy place because we're sinful, then we become purified by going to a holy place. But for the great devotees, they purify the holy places. So in that sense, the great devotees, they're even more than the holy places. In this regard, I'm going to read some translations from the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Bhagirath is petitioning Mother Ganga, you please come to the earth. You come to the earth, and my forefathers, they need to be redeemed. They're burned to ashes. You have to come. It's the only way. Mother Ganga objected. She said, when I fall from the sky to the surface of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I am not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the earth and go down to Rasatala, the Patala area of the universe. So that's one reason she objected. This Bhagirathi really had a lot of determination. It was after so much determination, he reached to Ganga, and then she had one objection. And who will sustain the force? Then again he had to do austerity to petition Lord Shiva to take Ganga in to sustain the force of Ganga's avataran, her falling from the sky. Then her second objection. O king, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully. In other words, she's saying, I'm not refusing, but you better think about it. What's going to happen? Then, reply, Sri Bhagiratha Uvacha, Sadhavo, not that word, sadhus, Sadhavo nyasena shanta brahmishta loka pavanaha harantya ghantenga sangha teshvaste hyaga bidharihi. Bhagirat said, those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in the renounced order, free from material desires, and who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, are always glorious and pure in behavior, and are able to deliver all fallen souls. When such pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reactions accumulated from other people will certainly be counteracted, for such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions. You see, in Sanskrit we have two half lines, and in English we have three, four, six lines. And everything's packed in Sanskrit. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Mother Ganges is available to everyone for bathing. Yeah, everyone can go. Therefore, not only will sinful persons bathe in the Ganga water, but in Haridwar and other holy places where the Ganga flows. I'm saying Ganga. It's written Ganges. That's for the benefit of the English-speaking population. Holy places where the Ganga flows, saintly persons and devotees will also bathe in the water of the Ganga. Devotees and saintly persons advanced in their renounced order can deliver even the Ganga. Tirti kurvanti tirtani svanta stena gadabrita. Because saintly devotees always keep the Lord within the core of their hearts, they can perfectly cleanse the holy places of all sinful reactions. Therefore, people in general must always respectfully honor saintly persons. It is ordered that as soon as one sees a Vaishnava or even a sannyasi, one should immediately offer respects to such a holy man. If one forgets to show respect in this way, one must observe a fast for that day. This is a Vedic injunction. One must be extremely careful to refrain from committing offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee or saintly person. So bathing in the Ganga, it's almost an offense, but not really. But if you think that I'm going to give all my sinful reactions to you, she doesn't like it. But it doesn't count as an offense because she's patita pavani. She's very merciful. She uplifts the fallen. But if we offend the devotees, that becomes very, very serious. Sadhu Savdhan. So this Tirti Kurvanti Tirtani Swantas Tena Gada Abrita. I've quoted that several times. This is spoken in relationship to Vidura, who, being such a holy devotee purifies the holy places and makes them into holy places. Here's a narration about Vidura from the third canto of Bhagavatam, how he came to go on pilgrimage, being pierced by arrows through his ears. In other words, the insulting words of Duryodhana, being afflicted by, being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So he left. He thought, I'm being insulted here, I'll go. He felt sorry, but at a deeper level not sorry, because he thought, anyway, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartahamiti manyate. People are acting according to the dictation, according to their previous, their thoughts, their desires are unfolding in their actions and words by the agency of the external energy, even though they think, I'm doing things. So he said, okay, it's time to quit. So left home. By his piety, Vidura achieved the advantages of the pious Kauravas. After leaving Hastinapura, he took shelter of many places of pilgrimage. There's, when the home is not a shelter, generally we think, why do you have a home? Well, you need a place for shelter, right? And you need shelter from the wind and the rain, and you need some place to keep your valuable things, to have some privacy with your family. But if there's no shelter there, then why stay? That Chanakya says that, what is that? Mata Grihe, what is that? Mata? Mata Yasya Grihe Nasti Bharya Chapriya Vadini Aranyantena Gantavyam Yataranyam Tata Griham. If your mother's not there, mother's expected to be unlimitedly kind and merciful. But if the mother's not there, she's died or she's staying with some other son or whatever. And the wife speaks in a very unpleasing way, then one should go to the forest, because the forest and the home are the same. Well, you go to the home is for shelter, and in the forest, where's the shelter? There are wild animals, there's heat and cold, there are snakes and insects and scorpions. Where's the shelter? One, the only, you have to take shelter of Krishna within your heart. So the idea is that the most dangerous place, well, the home is dangerous. It's not a place for shelter. So Vidura took shelter, not finding shelter at home. The home is supposed to be a shelter from all outside. You expect that people may be rude with you and try to cheat you, but at home you expect some peace and calmness. It's not true in the modern day. Who said that? This is quoted often in the Back to Godhead. Most people now, this is spoken in the 19th century. Thoreau, one American philosopher. Most people live lives of quiet desperation. Henry David Thoreau, spoken in the 19th century. And if we think, people were living very peacefully and nicely, not so. So he took shelter of the many places of pilgrimage, which are the Lord's lotus feet. So again, Pada Sevana, going on pilgrimage, is counted. Where does that come in the nine processes of devotional service? Going on pilgrimage, taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Because the place of pilgrimage are the Lord's lotus feet. With the desire to gain a high order of pious life, he traveled to holy places where thousands of transcendental forms of the Lord are situated. He began to travel alone, thinking only of Krishna, through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwaraka, and Mathura. He traveled where the air, hill, orchard, river, and lake are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the Pilgrim's Progress. I don't know whether that was one of the editors did that. I suspect that was Hayagriva put that in, because it's that's borrowed from English literature. I mentioned that before in the famous book, The Pilgrim's Progress, by John Bunyan. And Hayagriva was an English professor. So he added some things in here and there, just like in the second chapter of Gita. That quote is there, or as the Christians say, what profiteth a man if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul? That was inserted by Hayagriva, and that's in Bhagavad Gita as it is. And there's that whole purport in the second canto about how we can understand the presence of the soul and the super soul, very analytical. Jayadvaita Prabhu told me that, or was it Jayadvaita Swami told me that was put in by Hayagriva, actually. And of course, Prabhupada may have put Pilgrim's Progress. Srila Prabhupada also had quite some knowledge of English literature. He would quote from Shakespeare and Coleridge, "I am the Lord of all that I survey." He studied English literature in college. Anyway, going on to Vidura. While so traversing the earth, he simply performed duties to please the Supreme Lord Hari. His occupation was pure and independent. He was constantly sanctified by taking bath in holy places, although he was in the dress of a mendicant and had no hairdressing, nor a bed on which to lie. Thus he was always unseen by his various relatives. That's another thing going on pilgrimage. If you go alone, then you go out and your relatives don't know where you are. And in that sense, you become detached. They don't know where you are, you don't know where... Well, you know where they are, they're probably in the same place. And they may lament, but that's... Well, this is more talking about the renounced order of life, the sannyasi. Even the vanaprastha, husband and wife, may go together. But exactly where you are, people won't know. You may not have a fixed itinerary. And exactly where you are, they don't know. So the vanaprastha may come back after a few months and a child is born, or this and that. So many things may have happened in the meantime. But you become detached from all of that. And it helps to realize that after all, edana jovana putra parijana ite ke ache paratiti re. Kamala dala jala jivana talamala. It helps us to realize that all these things that we consider to define our existence, our possessions, our youthfulness, our sons, our relatives, ite ki ache paratitiri. How can we put faith in all of this? It's all just like water on a lotus leaf, ready to drop down. So going on pilgrimage, leaving all that, especially if one goes on a prolonged pilgrimage. And in Vidura's case, he just left suddenly. It seems that he didn't have any program to do so, just on the spot. Left his bow, and what? It didn't say he stopped and picked up so many things to take. He just left. And where did he go? They didn't know. They didn't know whether he was alive or dead. They might not have been expected to come back. Might have been expected that if he left home, he would go to holy places, because after all, he was a very pious person and a great devotee of Krishna. So what do you do if you leave home? So it may have been expected that he would go to holy places. But he was just aloof from everything, setting an example for others. And that tradition has continued up to the present day. There are so many sadhus in India. People who just leave home and they're out. And maybe at any stage of life. Sometimes like Narottam Das, young boy. At a young age they have a feeling that, what am I going to do in this life? Let me leave and be a sadhu. So some, they get that early in their life. And they never really have any material entanglement. And it may come later in life. Thus, when he, Vidura, was in the land of Bharatavarsha, traveling to all the places of pilgrimage, he visited Prabhasa Kshetra. At that time, Maharaj Yudhishthira was the emperor and held the world under one military strength and one flag at the place of pilgrimage at Prabhas. Now, if we go to Prabhas nowadays, well, just at the site is Somnath, which is an ancient temple of Lord Shiva, and it's one of the, I should know, 12 Jyotirlingas. But Prabhas was a holy place. But now if we go to Prabhas, it's known as a holy place because that is the place where Krishna left this world. He enacted that pastime. But otherwise, even apart from that, it was a holy place even before that. So Vidura came there, and it came to his knowledge that all his relatives had died due to violent passion. In other words, the battle of Kurukshetra had taken place. Just as an entire forest burns due to fire produced by the friction of bamboos. After this, he proceeded to where the river Sarasvati flows west. On the bank of the river Sarasvati, there were 11 places of pilgrimage, namely, and the names are given. They're all, every syllable of Bhagavatam is purifying, so we can recite this. Trita, Ushana, Manu, Prithu, Agni, Asita, Vayu, Sudasa, Go, Guha, Shradhadev. So these are all places of pilgrimage which are unknown nowadays, as even the Sarasvati, the course of the Sarasvati in Western India. It appears there were several Sarasvati rivers. The one in Western India, that's now, it's not sure where it was. Vidura visited all of them and duly performed rituals. There were also many other temples of various forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, established by great sages and demigods. These temples were marked with the chief emblems of the Lord, and they reminded one always of the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Thereafter, he passed through very wealthy provinces like Surat, Sovir, and Matsya, and through Western India known as Kuru Jangala. At last, he reached the bank of the Yamuna, where he happened to meet Uddhava, the great devotee of Lord Krishna. So after visiting all these holy places, he met Uddhava, great devotee. And he wanted to take instruction from Uddhava. Uddhava directed him to Maitreya, and that becomes a large section of Bhagavatam, where Maitreya is instructing Vidura. His travels to so many holy places, you could probably make a very interesting storybook. But that's not given in the Bhagavatam. It's just briefly mentioned. It doesn't undermine it or say that it's not useful or valuable, but so much description is given of the instructions given when Vidura met the Jangam Tirtha, the moving holy place, Maitreya, being directed by Uddhava to do so. Then there's so much. It might be more interesting from the Manoranjan, the what delights the mind, to hear about all the stories of traveling here and there. But Bhagavatam gives more attention to the instructions of Maitreya to Vidura. And then why these particular sadhus are mentioned? Because they think of Krishna always. Tomara Hridaya Shada Gobinda Vishram. They're always thinking of Krishna. They're actually Krishna conscious, and therefore they are Tirthas. Krishna Tirthakar, who makes Tirthas. So by manifesting in the consciousness of persons who are willing to accept Krishna, Krishna wants to manifest himself. Krishna wants that we'll all think of him. All power is with Krishna, but he allows us to choose, do we want to serve him or not? If we do, by his power, he makes the sadhus, they're sadhus because they're always thinking of Krishna. Satatam kirtayanto mam, they're always glorifying Krishna. And Krishna gives them the power by which they can deliver others. It's actually Krishna's power. We say His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. In Hindi, that's rendered Krishna Kripa Shimurti, the very form of Krishna's mercy. We say the Guru delivers us, yes, but as an agent of Krishna. All power is with Krishna, ultimately. So the pure devotees, they themselves are pure. How are they pure? Because they're always thinking of Krishna and they're always engaging in acts of purity. Manmanaha, they're thinking of Krishna, bhava mad bhakta. Become my devotee means there are so many things to do in devotional service. There's so many activities to perform in devotional service. Madhyaji mang namaskaru, there are some examples to worship Krishna, and there's so many things to do in the worship of Krishna, bowing down before Krishna. So in this way, pure devotees are pure because they always think of Krishna, they are always engaged in acts of service to Krishna, and they themselves are pure, and they purify us by their purity. And their purity manifests also. One aspect of the purity of pure devotees is they're always engaged in the service of Krishna. Another aspect of their purity is their compassion, that they want to engage others in the service of Krishna. So in this way, they help us, these two ways of purifying. Darshane pavitra karo eto maragun. Just by seeing the devotees, we become purified. And then they engage us in activities. So in this way, they purify us and they help us to cross over. Anyone who saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or anyone who sees his devotees, they get so much mercy just by seeing. But then if we follow their instructions, or the instructions of his devotees. Now, discussing how the pure devotees, they purify holy places. Anyone who lives according to the instructions of scripture. They can also be called, technically they're called a sadhu. It doesn't matter if they're married. But if they live according to the instructions of scripture, and he's absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, then he's a holy person. Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, we have the 12 Mahajans, of whom Swayambhu, Brahma, is married. He's not a sannyasi. Narada is a brahmachari, committed brahmachari. Means even his father, Brahma, wanted him to marry, but he refused also, as did the four Kumaras. So Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Lord Shiva, although he's detached from the material world, he's totally detached from the material energy, and he's totally attached to her also. He's full of paradoxes. Lord Shiva is full of paradoxes. He's the most pure and he's covered in snakes and ashes from the crematorium, surrounded by ghosts. He's completely detached. He doesn't even have a house to live in. But he's totally attached to the material energy. He functions. Shiva and Shakti, they're inseparable. So he's married. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, again, they're not married. Kapila, Manu again, married. Prahlada, married. Janaka, married. Bhishma, if you get it wrong, he might shoot an arrow right from wherever he is right now. He's definitely not married. I mean, he even fought with his guru. He's definitely not going to get married. Bhishma, then Bali, married. Vyasaki, another committed, Shukadev. Another committed brahmachari. Shukadev became known as the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which he describes the torments and horrors of life within the womb, as is described in many of the Puranas. But he himself stayed in the womb because he thought it was better than being out there. It's too much maya out there. And he was the son of Vyasadeva, and he thought, this Vyasa, you know, in an attached household. You know, the brahmacharis think like that. And Yamaraj, married man. You can imagine when he comes home from work, his wife says, "Oh, did you have a good day at work?" That's in traditional Western culture. That's what women used to ask their husbands. The wife's at home, the husband comes, "Did you have a good day at work?" "Oh, yeah, tortured." So, heard that Stalin's coming soon. Should be interesting. Things like that. So, little prajalpa. That's not right, is it? So, anyway, the point is that anyone who follows the regulative principles of devotional service, they are extraordinary. They're very great personalities. So they themselves are holy people. So that when they go to holy places, they enhance the atmosphere. In the Narada Pancharatra, it's stated that he who daily takes the water used in washing the feet of Hari, means the Charanamrita, and the Naivedya, who takes Krishna Prasadam as his food, and chants the mantras of Hari, he is Jivan Mukta. He's liberated even while living in this world. So maybe a householder, and he's doing what you might call ordinary devotional service, although there's no such thing as ordinary devotional service. So Narada Pancharatra states that the earth becomes instantly pure by the dust of his feet, and the tirthas become purified. So even quote-unquote ordinary devotees can sanctify the holy places. Even the Ganga is said to be purified by the touch of a purified individual. That's from Narada Pancharatra. Srila Prabhupada himself brought so many people back to Godhead, helped them to cross over. He made many tirthas. He himself, Tirthaka, he made so many books. He made so many devotees, in the sense he imbued them with the sense of devotional service. And he continues to do so through his books, through his devotees. Wherever his books are respectfully kept and studied, wherever the Srimad Bhagavatam is kept in someone's home, or Bhagavad Gita is kept in there, and especially if it's kept respectfully and studied, that place becomes a tirtha. So in that sense, there are so many tirthas all over the world. In Russia, in America, in Japan, there's so many tirthas Srila Prabhupada made all over the world, and his disciples and disciples of his disciples are helping to do that by continuing to distribute his books, by continuing to distribute his mercy in the form of his instructions. The Srimad Bhagavatam Mahatmya states that all the holy rivers, the holy kundas and the holy lakes, all the different kinds of yajnas, and the seven sacred cities, the moksha puris, namely Ayodhya, Mathura, Maya, which means Haridwar, Kashi, Kanchi, Avanti, and Dwaraka, and all the holy mountains are present where Srimad Bhagavatam is discussed. So Srila Prabhupada instituted this discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam every day in his temples. I'm utilizing this time for discussing topics of Vishnu Sahasranama, which are non-different from Srimad Bhagavatam, and you'll see I've quoted so much from Bhagavatam here. And the point, what is the point of Srimad Bhagavatam? Is it a book? There's some paper, and some binding, some print. It's not just a book, it's because it's full of topics of Krishna. Therefore, it's so sacred. So please, yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. It's a spotless Purana which is very dear to the Vaishnavas. Why is it dear to the Vaishnavas? Because it's full of topics of Krishna. That's the whole point. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas chakripa sindhubhya evacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.